You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 12 January. We're back. We're live. All the best for 2026. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. Commodities continued moving into the new year. I suppose they don't particularly care about calendars, but I'm interested on that. Mike Brown from ETFSA, growth in the ETF indexes last year. The top 40 was almost 50% higher. It's a staggering number. Yeah, and that was all mostly commodities. And then we're chatting with Jaco van Jaarsveld from Experian. There's a surprising consumer point around indebtedness that actually looks quite positive, but it might not be quite telling us what we think it is. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb: Discovery Health caves to pressure, says it will cover costs of claims over payments. We apologize unreservedly to members affected by this error, says Discovery. Bloomberg: Federal Reserve served with Department of Justice subpoenas, vows to stand firm. Move marks escalation of Trump's longstanding feud with the Fed chair. Morning markets: US was green on Friday, S&P up 0.7, Nasdaq a full percent higher. The East is green, Sydney a 0.1% up, Tokyo is closed, old age day. Hong Kong up 0.7% and Tencent just over 2% higher. Commodities all green, gold futures 4,588, Brent 63.41, platinum 2,387 and palladium 1,941. The rand is 16.46, Bitcoin 92,000 and top 40 opening call 575 points or just over 0.5% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, always appreciate the early morning. As I said in the intro there, I suppose, you know, commodities markets, they're not really concerned around the vagrancies of calendars. But we have seen over the last couple of weeks, commodities carried on. Gold is doing what gold does. PGMs had a sudden spike as well. The commodity story looks set so far to continue into 2026.
Good morning, Simon. Welcome back. I mean, there's that famous quote from Lennon, isn't it? Where there are decades when nothing happens and there are weeks when decades happen. And it certainly feels like that was happening while we were sitting on holiday. Big moves in the commodities. You mentioned all the handles on them. Also copper, yeah, hitting 13,000 as well. It's just so much going on. Look, a lot of it to do, I imagine, with this nerves around the U.S., the geopolitics, the weaker dollar. You throw in Iran, you throw in all the other geopolitics in the story. We seem to have forgotten about Venezuela already. Oil, look where oil is going as well. All in all, it looks like a real that commodity story, as you said on your intro, looking like it's set to certainly continue for the time being anyway.
You mentioned oil there and Venezuela, and oil did briefly, Brent dropped below 60. But that's the one commodity that perhaps is kind of going the other way. The world is awash, and the Venezuela story, abduction, call it what you will, it doesn't really fundamentally change it. That's not a near-term solution by any strength, is my sense.
Yeah, completely right. I mean, oil doesn't, oil, as you said, the world is awash with oil, and that Venezuelan type of oil that they get out there is, despite sitting on the largest known deposits in the world, the thickness of that, the sludge that comes out the ground there, almost impossible to refine. And let's remember as well, Simon, and they're not even doing 1 million barrels a day at the moment. So it's going to take probably, 5, 6, 7 years and billions of investment to get that out. So that's not changing. But just to note, I mean, a weak oil price, not necessarily bad for the world.
Yeah.
Certainly for us in South Africa, we import all of our energy resources. So not a bad thing. Although the other side, a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because the other side of that story, a weak oil price does tell you that the global economy is certainly starting to slow down a little bit. And I feel it probably is.
The PGMs, and they were, they were late to the party. They were sort of mid-year. They suddenly got all exciting and the like. And again, there's a trend that is continuing. I mean, even rhodium going a bit, although perhaps that's, rhodium's the weird one. But they're another good period from them, trading higher and looking positive.
They did get down to levels where they weren't even moving. I mean, they literally didn't budge. The miners, I mean, remember a few of them a while ago. I mean, you know, Glencore even battling to even, you know, go up on a few days in a row. Yeah. And all of a sudden, it's at 100 rand a share. You know, so first and foremost, M&A activity certainly putting a bit of fire in the commodity sector. We started mm-hmm. a while back, beginning of last year with Anglo's and BHP Billiton. Now we've got Rio and Glencore and a few others. So M&A activity there. Also this weaker dollar certainly playing in. And I keep mentioning copper. You know, Dr. Copper is such a good barometer. And it's not so much, yes, there is it's certainly a lot of copper demand. But the other side of that is actually there's a copper shortage. I mean, there is significantly mm-hmm. estimated to be a big copper shortage in the next decade. So there is stockpiling happening there too. So again, you know, a bit of a sweet spot for these PGMs and for the industrial metals.
You mentioned mergers. Of course, mm-hmm. BHP, it was almost a year ago, tried Anglo. Anglo's now going off to Canada and tech. Rio Tinto and Glencore. Does that leave BHP kind of out in the cold? Or maybe that mm-hmm. works out to be not the worst place to be in, I don't know, 3 to 5 years. They kind of started it and got left behind.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, that upper echelon of the businesses can be brutal, but I do feel they're a little bit sort of alone in this M&A activity. They find themselves a little bit sidelined. And as you said, they did start it, and they did give almost a sort of heads up what they wanted to do with Anglo's, and then Anglo's went ahead and did it on their own. So, and now they did exactly what BHP Billiton wanted to do. I do feel a little bit isolated now, and they're going to need to do something. But that's why I don't know if they're going to come back for another bite to the cherry with Anglo's. I'm not sure. I think that tech mergers, the merger of equals is very well received, so unlikely. But BHP Billiton is possibly the odd one out at the moment.
And then a quick last, silver. I have to be honest, I don't track silver. The only silver I own is the cutlery I eat my muesli with in the morning. But my sense is a very illiquid market, and hence, I mean, crazy things happen. We go all the way back to the 80s and the Hunt brothers when they try to corner it.
Yeah, crazy things happen. I mean, wild, wild swings. I mean, up 4% as we speak now. It is extremely more volatile. There's a lot of leverage in that system. It is much more of a speculative stock. I mean, I have heard stories. I've tried to do a little bit of homework as well. I mean, it is starting to be used a little bit more in industry than it was in the past. But nevertheless, I mean, I certainly look at silver as being a highly speculative asset.
Yeah. Demand's certainly there, but I think it is more speculation. I think that's probably what's moving it. And it has almost tripled in since middle of last year. We'll leave it there. Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning time. That's our poll today. LinkedIn and Twitter. Talking commodities, another good year for the sector. I mean, I'm not sure. The Resi did 142% last year. I don't think we're going to do that again, but are we on track for another good year in the commodity space? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Mike Brown, ETFSA. Mike, appreciate the early morning time. Talking ETFs, I've just been chatting commodities. Last year, I want to touch on the commodity, but before we get to that, because in the ETF space, it was astounding. The top 40 did 47% and some change in 2025. The relevant ETFs obviously doing in line with that. It was a spectacular year for investors in South Africa.
Yes, very much so. The South African market, having more or less underperformed for quite a long period of time, started picking up in late 2023. But 2024, 25, excellent years. 46-47% increase in the top 40 index, all share index about the same. By comparison, the global index, MSCI index in rands, went up 5%, and the S&P 500, the American index, even less in rands. So yes, at the moment, it seems to be a South African story in terms of performance.
Absolutely. And it was commodities. And I mean, you know, we kind of forget, I suppose, we've had a 10 years of not much excitement. It started in sort of 2021, 2022. But before that, there wasn't much happening. We are a commodity market. We saw that in the moves. And one of them, perhaps catching a lot by surprise, I was one of them, was silver, which has had a phenomenal run. And there is a exchange traded note from Absa that tracks silver and has done incredibly well over the last decade. Also,
the commodity price cycle probably bottomed in 2015, as you say. There was a bit of a surge, you know, after COVID 2020, 2021, but now we're sort of back, really growing strongly. Silver, you know, went up in the last year by 120% yeah. in rand terms. And it's a catch up, really. It's been underperforming gold. Gold is the commodity that I think has led this particular revival, mainly because central banks started an alternative to holding dollars as a reserve asset. You're buying gold, and you're seeing China, India, and some other central banks, you know, wanting to protect their reserves against possible American seizing their dollar assets. So that central bank buying has been persistent, and it's not going to go away. And I don't think that gold's going to come back on the market, because having bought it now, it's lower prices than currently. Yeah. I can't see these guys selling it. So the gold market is, you know, really was the leading element, and now we've had silver as a catch-up. And very recently, of course, we've had things like platinum and PGM metals, you know, having a real run in the last 6 months or so, because the fundamentals are now starting to look better for those metals, you know, with electric cars not selling to the extent we thought, and people moving back to petrol or hybrid engines, which need catalysts. And, of course, you need platinum and fuel cells, which increasingly is being used to generate energy out of hydrogen and other energy sources. So, yes, it's a commodity story at the moment. There could be further sort of upside. You know, the fundamentals don't look too bad for most commodities.
And that's a good point, because it is, I mean, there's a trend, and the cycle in commodities typically plays out, you know, over years. It's not a quick turn either way. We could probably say that we're 4 or so years into the cycle if we take a bottom around 21 or 22. Probably got a bit more to go. And to be clear, I'm not sure we're going to get another 142% from our Resi 10 and the Satrix Resi, but this is certainly a trend that looks set to continue.
Yes, well, I think, you know, the Satrix Resi, of course, you know, you're buying, it used to be dominated by the big mining houses, but now they've virtually all moved offshore. It's now, the Resi's really platinum and gold mines, and these sort of prices of commodities, you know, PGMs and gold, and we don't produce a lot of silver in South Africa, but these sort of prices, they're making a lot of money, and they're going to pay incredibly good dividends. And so I think the Resi will stay up, but it's not going to grow 146%. 142%, which it's done over the past year. But we could well have a resource-led stock market still being a feature for some time ahead, Simon. You know, I think there's a good chance of that.
Yeah, absolutely, and I take your point. I mean, the share prices aren't got the upside, but those dividends are going to start coming, and they're going to be massive. These guys are printing cash at that point. Mark Brown, ETFSA, appreciate the early morning. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Jaco van Jaarsveld. He's Chief Strategy and Innovation Officer at Experian. Jaco, appreciate the time. Some data that came out, your latest consumer default index actually showed a 14% year-on-year improvement in default rates. On the surface, really, really good news. Is there some scratching that perhaps we need to do to get to a truer picture? Or are South Africans really managing their money much better than perhaps many thought?
Yes, Simon, and thank you for having me. There's a bit of scratching to be done there. If you look at it at the surface, absolutely. We've seen an improvement in the rate of first payment default when you look at the Experian Consumer Default Index, which is a good story. However, when one starts looking a bit deeper into the numbers, we tend to identify that the reason for this improvement is less consumer behavioral improvement or consumer financial improvement. It's more a function of reduced lending. And we can clearly see it from a supply side, from a credit supply side across the industry, across all products, where supply is significantly lower than where it was pre-COVID, and it has never gotten back to where it was at pre-COVID levels, with approval rates on average across all credit products roughly around the 30% mark.
Wow.
Whereas demand, consumer demand, has far outstripped pre-COVID levels. In fact, it's probably 10, 20% higher than it was before COVID. And therefore, there's a demand and supply gap here that needs to be looked at. And naturally, there's two ways to manage exposure from a credit provider perspective. It is either your profits, you reduce exposure and manage your impairments, which is typically what we see happening now. So we mustn't confuse the good banking results and financial institution results with more money being generated from revenue. It's more impairment savings and reduced impairments and focused lending to specific consumers, where if you go look at the average South African consumer, whilst there's no doubt that some are finding the lower interest rates and the improved affordability beneficial, the majority of consumers are actually exposed to multiple credit cards, multiple credit products, and it's the same segment of the market that's targeted by everybody.
Yeah.
And when you look at that specific segment, which when we look at from an Experian perspective, we segment the market into 6 groups and 30 types. But if we look at it at the macro group level, there's around 12.5% of the total credit active population that holds more than 85% of total outstanding debt.
Wow.
And those individuals are the most distressed. And those are the individuals that's continuously lent to and has been lent to over the last 24 months by all financial institutions, because they are typically perceived to be the safest. And once you start scratching in those segments, you identify pockets where, hold on a second, this is the segment that we see increasing debt review applications and increasing entrance into debt review, et cetera, et cetera.
I get your point around it. So, I mean, there are segments of the market who are getting that access. Some aren't, but many are. And they're the vulnerable, to your point. They're the ones who are getting debt review and the like. And they're the segment of, and you the phrase in a note you put out recently, effective credit control, which sounds, it sounds very technical, but in essence, it's things like cleaning up debt, trying not to get more debt, checking credit scores, improving your credit score, all the sort of the basics that can really improve a household finances and balance sheet.
Absolutely. And it's no different to everyday finance management, right? Mm-hmm. The thing that I think a lot of South African consumers do not do and do not realize is that the data that is your data, your financial data, mm-hmm. is freely available to you on the credit bureau. So you can literally log on to your credit bureau profile and actually access your credit report free as many times as you want, as frequently as you want. It needs to be made available to you.
Mm-hmm.
So at Experian, we make it available through our consumer app. And once you log on there, the key thing that it shows you is what's your score mm-hmm. and what's all your debtors' exposure. So all credit accounts that you hold.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you a clear indication of how payment or mispayment negatively or positively impacts on your score. And in essence, that is the key thing that as a consumer you need to look at. The more credit lines you have and the less affordability you have to pay all this credit, you start missing payments. The moment you start missing payments, your score drops. Your score drops, you get less access to credit, less access to low-cost credit,
mm-hmm.
but potentially access to high-cost credit. And that's where the challenge starts happening with consumers is when they're in desperate need for credit and they get into financial distress and they start missing payments, it doesn't immediately mean you're not going to get access to credit, especially if you are an active credit participant, because that's technically easier to lend to someone that's active in credit. And when a credit provider looks at it, they'll go and say, well, Yaku has 5 credit products. He pays them very well. I can see he's paying them, so I'll give him another credit product. But what they don't know is that from a cash flow perspective, potentially I am distressed. The only entity that will know whether I'm cash flow distressed is the entity that holds my transaction data. Any other entity that doesn't see my transaction data won't pick up any distress until such time as I start missing payments on a credit product.
Gotcha. And that then brings in the risk. And it does, it comes to your point around that credit score. And I mean, way back, you know, 20 years ago, they were impossible to get hold of. I check mine pretty much every month these days. And that should be the standard. Keep an eye on it. See what's happening. There's also the other benefit. You can see if there's anyone trying to impersonate you. There's all of those benefits to really making it part of your sort of monthly budgeting process is check the credit score.
Absolutely. And I think the most beneficial thing, as you said there, is number one, you get to see if there's any inquiries on your credit profile. So you will very quickly pick up if there's been 10 inquiries this month and you didn't make any of them.
Yeah.
You can go see, well, who's making these inquiries? And that's an early potential fraud indicator.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing you can look at is, I mean, I looked at my credit report about 5 years ago and I noticed that I'm still a director of an active company that I had when I just finished university.
Yeah.
I went, hold on a second, that company was closed when I started working. And then you go through the process with SIPSI to say, this company is not active, it hasn't been active for 20 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you an opportunity, because all that data is considered when your score is looked at. It's not only your credit profile and your payment of credit, even though that's got the highest weight and the highest, mm-hmm. that's the highest weight in terms of contributing to your score. Other data says, are you a director of a company, et cetera, et cetera. Those information, that information is also important. And therefore, it's fundamentally critical that each consumer accesses their report and then actually communicates with the credit bureau to get it fixed if anything needs to be addressed.
It's that if there are errors, but I hadn't thought, of course, it's way more than just credit. There's a ton on there. But we'll leave it there. Siako from Jaarsveld, he's Chief Strategy Innovation Officer, Experian. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobukle, Seren, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.